The Marching Round Table is proud to be an official media partner of Drum Corps International.
This podcast is sponsored by Digital Performance Gear, found at digitalperformancegear.com. Fred Emery Smith and Steve Ridley are composers for films and video games. I had the great opportunity to talk with them at the Arcadia Music and Arts Symposium, where they were presenting and sharing their expertise with those in attendance. You're going to love hearing some of these behind-the-scenes stories of how this all works and what the life of a film composer and a composer for video games is like.
So say there's like a chase going on, or like, you know, like a car chase. You might want to have like a foundation of like good pulse, like rhythm, you know, because it's action and it needs to be upbeat. But then later on, you might want to add thickness with like more instruments, but it still has that rhythm to it. And then you might want to add melody to it, so it's a little bit bigger, more triumphant, or you know, whatever. And then you might want to take all that away and have like some other thin layer where it might not, they might be like hiding in, you know, it's not full
stealth
chase
mode.
But yeah, stealth mode or something, you know, I don't know. So you got all those kind of layers to think about, and so it can get kind of complicated, but you have to keep it organized. And they, you know, a lot of the developers and producers, they really keep it organized. They are much more organized than a lot of film productions. Much more organized. They have to be.
Great information recorded live at the Arcadia Music and Arts Symposium and shared here on the Marching Roundtable. This podcast is sponsored by Digital Performance Gear, found at digitalperformancegear.com. Digital Performance Gear provides innovative choices for uniforms, flags, props, floors, and more for the pageantry arts. They are dedicated to providing the highest level of customer experience from design through production and to delivery. Using all digital print methods, the possibilities are endless when it comes to designing for your conceptual needs. DPG Apparel enhances their offerings through an exciting line of decorated apparel items and accessories using the latest technologies in digital printing, screen printing, and embroidery. Digital Performance Gear wants to change the way the industry looks, and they want the industry to look like whatever you imagine. Check them out at digitalperformancegear.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Marching Roundtable podcast. This is Tim Hinton. Thank you so much for listening. This is the last live podcast we're doing from the Arcadia Music and Arts Symposium. It's been a fantastic 3 days. Man, I cannot tell you how exciting it's been to talk to the people that have been sitting around this table, sharing their expertise and so willing to talk. And today, Stephen Ridley. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
Hello. Hi.
And also Fred Emery Smith. Fred, how are you?
Hey.
So why don't you guys, we're all a little punchy from a long 3 days. So why don't you guys each briefly sort of say who you are? I'll let you go first, Fred.
Yeah, film, TV composer, a lot with that. TV, film, video games, and some virtual reality stuff as well.
So yeah, is there something that we would all know that you've done? Like, it's...
Well, I think the biggest thing I've worked on, which is a little time ago, is Transformers 3. Doing some work for that.
Cool.
And then worked on a Disney show called Pen Zero, Part-Time Hero, which was so much fun.
So it's,
and then so many other things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've been doing it a long time really successfully. I just think people, it'd be cool for them to know, oh, yeah, I've heard his stuff, or I've heard something he's worked on.
I'm like,
on.
What
I think that's
do
cool.
I can't even remember. I don't know what I did. I have to look at it.
That's good.
And Stephen, tell a little bit about yourself.
I'm Stephen Ridley. I'm a composer, and I kind of wear a lot of hats and done a lot of commercials, promos, some for ABC, done some short films for HBO. And but I also love pageantry and marching arts, and Fred and I both have continued to do that whenever we can. And the Arcadia Symposium is our chance to kind of start to connect the dots between the industries.
Cool.
And also to network cross-industry, which is kind of
cool. Yeah, it's been one of the great things of conversations people had, like, oh, you know, with this, we're all doing a lot of the same stuff in all these different ways. Anything that you've worked on that people would know? You mentioned some things in past.
Yeah, I've done some short films for HBO, like there was a Shawshank Redemption, the Shawshank Redemption spoof called the Shark Tank Redemption, which for many years was one of those shorts that would run between the big funny. HBO.
Cool.
Yeah, it was like Shawshank if it happened in a Hollywood agency. So, but it was the kind of thing that was on so many times, so long for between the HBO features that I could actually use that. And then for ABC, I did a bunch of Academy Awards promos, like when the next next week on the Academy Awards, da 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 da.
Yeah.
They did like big, huge Disney style, lots of wind chimes and strings music. So I did
wind
that
chimes
for
and strings.
A couple years for Disney.
That's Disney right there.
Yeah, more wind chimes. I got that note. Yeah. More wind chimes.
It just
more
needs to be magical.
Fantastic.
More magic. Yeah.
I love that. All right. So I'm writing that down. More wind chimes. We'll all use that. Okay. So you guys have talked about a lot of things over the weekend. What are we going to primarily concentrate on today?
Well, you know, Fred did a couple awesome talks. One was focused on film and TV, and the one we just did was focused on game composition. Mm-hmm. So I might just actually bring up a couple things that you mentioned, Fred, specifically about game composition,
mm-hmm.
and you were kind of talking about how it's different from film, TV,
sure.
and you were kind of going into the concept of layers.
Well, layers, but loop-based compositions for environments, gameplay that's kind of out of not linear, but it's just based on the player. They could stay in the same level for hours, or they finish that level within 30 seconds. You know, I don't know, whatever.
Hmm.
But that music has to be played and continuously played for that level. So it's a matter of it being loopable, and there's a lot of detail in terms of that. But layers is just the concept of maybe the introduction or like the navigation of the level is very like low key music, you know, not a lot going on. And then maybe you go into another room or something, and then it maybe adds another layer, another musical layer. You know, mm-hmm.
So the music's already there, and then when you go somewhere else, there's something added on top of it.
Added on top of it.
Another layer
yeah.
of music
yeah.
on top of it.
Yeah, that's could be anything. Could be maybe faster drums, like, or you add a melody when like you meet a main character in somewhere in the environment. To you know, it's all over the road. But the point is like there's layers that need to be added when you're playing the game, and it needs to be loopable so that they can continuously play. And so I think that's one of the bigger differences between film and video game is video is so, it is what it is, you know, starts here, stops here, that's it. With video game, it's, you know, like what we just said, it could be, they just need to loop it because they're in the environment for so long. So it's, you know, you just have to take in consideration your music being able to be loopable. So you have to figure that out compositionally, you know, making sure you don't go to different keys. You have to make sure it's in the same key so it all works together.
Or like, for instance, the last chord of the loop has to merge well into the first chord of the loop, obviously.
Usually, yes. Yeah.
Well, so I have no idea about this because I'm not like a gamer. So
I'm getting a little detailed.
No. But like, I have no idea. Is one of these looped compositions like 30 seconds long or 5 minutes long? I have no idea.
Both?
Really?
No,
all
of the above. It depends on the game. It really depends on the game and what you're doing with it and what level you're on and this and, you know, certain things like that.
Okay.
Like, I'll write a composition that's maybe 3 minutes long, say, and then they'll take one section and loop it or another section and loop it, depending on the environment that you're in with the video game.
And you also mentioned that in terms of complexity, maybe you would have to – did you mention – I think I heard this, that the most complex might be like the thing you're getting toward, like a really thick
maybe,
texture.
Yeah. Yeah, like you want to base it so you can take away layers or add layers, right? So depending on – oh, man, it's like such a wide variety. But so say there's like a chase going on or like, you know, like a car chase. You might want to have like a foundation of like good pulse, like rhythm, you know, because it's action and it needs to be upbeat. But then later on, you might want to add – thickness with like more instruments, but it still has that rhythm to it. And then you might want to add melody to it, so it's a little bit bigger, more triumphant, or you know, whatever. And then you might want to take all that away and have like some other thin layer where it might not, they might be like hiding in, you know, it's not full
stealth
chase,
mode.
But yeah, stealth mode or something, you know, I don't know. So you got all those kind of layers to think about, and so it can get kind of complicated, but you have to keep it organized. And they, you know, a lot of the developers and producers, they really keep it organized. They are much more organized than a lot of film productions. Much more organized. They have to be.
And on that, kind of staying with the technical stuff for a minute, for those who got geek out about this or curious, because I play some games and I know what you're talking about, where you're maybe in exploration mode, walking through an open world.
Yeah.
You can tell the music is looping, right?
Right.
But then you walk into a new zone, it starts to snow, and there's this incredible, essentially a crossfade that a lot of gamers don't even notice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll call it a crossfade, and I'll let, well, tell us what it is. Tell us what it is, because all of a sudden the music is new. How do they do that?
Well, I think it's – well, I don't run that software. I don't know it, to be honest with you. But they program it into the game. I'm like totally the wrong person to.
No, that's okay. That's awesome. So you're basically saying that's a technical, but that's a technical thing that somebody
it's
else
a technical
does.
Thing, yeah. Because you might transition to a completely different piece of music, or from like say I don't know, you succeed in that level. So when you succeed, yay! And then like music is triumphant. It's a totally different piece of music, and they have to crossfade it out. Or you fail. So it's like the gameplay music, and then, you know,
womp, womp, womp,
you know, and then you fail. So that's a completely different thing that they program. Certain things happen, that's the music that's played.
Do you have to write the transition so that it compositionally it works to get from one to the next in each scenario?
No, I think, well, I haven't, but I, you know, I can't speak for every single game. I don't really know. But I haven't. It's usually just a transition that's just happens. Like there might be a sound effect that kind of masks it, or a completely different composition, like just go, that just immediately goes.
Okay.
I mean, other people that are like way into this could be, speak better into that specific detail.
Another thing that you mentioned that's kind of that works with this as well is you talked a little bit about a big AAA title and how the workflow might work and what you might have to do or not do versus a little indie game. When most people who are going to first start out in game composition are going to do an indie game with a friend or maybe someone they met.
Yeah.
And you were saying a little bit about the differences in the amounts of work.
Well, independent games like small games or mobile app games are going to be a lot less work. There's just going to be a lot less content. Where the big games, I mean, there's so many moving parts. It's really big and there's a lot of people involved. And all the job titles are separated. Like everyone has a very specific job. Whereas like very small independent game, more often than not, the composers are asked to do like sound design as well, or also even help out with like recording dialogue for like actors, things like that. So it might be like a one-man band doing all audio. And I don't have much experience in that regard, but I know plenty of people who do it that way. So
even stuff like Foley, like footsteps,
if they probably wanted it, yeah.
So they would think of you as the one-stop shop for all their audio in that case.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's not as detailed. Like there might not be a lot of Foley. I don't know. Yeah.
Versus in a AAA game, let's say AAA meaning like Sony or EA, a big huge game.
Yeah.
What's your work like there? Like what's your process? Do you just want to do one little slice of the workflow?
I do. I on the music side, I mean I won't do any sound design. I won't do any Foley. I won't do any dialogue or editing. I would literally just do the music side. Because on that end, because we might be recording it with live players, live orchestra, live band. And there's just so much involved with that it's easier for me to just focus on that. You know, and it's a lot of times there's a lot of people involved on the music team. And so I'm like one of the people that are on it. So,
so if you're doing like one of these big, you call it a AAA game, I have no idea what kind of project that is. Does that take you a year, a month?
Can, yeah. Can easily take a year.
So that's sort of like composing a film where you're taking this, you're taking a lot of time because there's so much work.
Yeah, and it can come in waves too. It like, you know, we do X amount of work now and then they need time to implement it. And then we come back and do more. Or they, you know, we do the whole thing and then we need to do like a major update and there's a lot more to do. So it can take up to a year. Maybe even more. I don't know, but also it's just a matter of months as well. I've been on projects where they're just a few months.
Hmm.
Yeah,
that's interesting because you were talking about in one of your other talks, which was most specifically about you do a lot of television, but specifically film and television projects. And now a feature film might be three months, which is pretty accelerated, or 2 months really accelerated for a feature film. But you're saying, and I want to ask you a question about that in a minute, but you're saying about games that they could take a year? Is that because of like a back and forth?
Yeah, I think in my experience, we've always been brought in advance. You know, like there's a lot more. It's not like linear where you're doing left to right. We're brought in early. You know, sometimes we're even coordinating with bands. Like they might feature a band. And then we have to take that and, you know, make an underscore out of that for gameplay or whatever. And so a lot of times we're brought in super early. That's in my experience anyway.
Whereas with the film, maybe the film's already done, it's been shot by the time you get brought in.
Well, that also depends too, because sometimes they don't know what composer they're going to use until it's already done. And then they're like, oh my goodness, we got to get a composer, quick. Other times, you know, the film that I'm working on right now, I've been working with a director for several years, and so when he even had the idea, he sent me, you know, some storyboard ideas of, hey, what do you think? You know, and then like 2 years later, we're scoring it. So
wow, so that's like a relationship that you're building with a director
totally
over time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
That's great. On that tip, you were talking in the film scoring talk, you were kind of describing your current film project that you're working on, which is a feature film, or indie feature film.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about kind of the opposite thing where you're no longer working on a team for somebody else, but you're like running a team.
Right.
And had to put together what it sounded like a pretty big team. Can you tell us more about how that works?
Sure. Well, first off, it's just, you know, you bring more people on, the more organized you have to be, right? And so what I did is after organizing where and how we're going to use music in the film, we kind of dialed that in as far as what we're going to do, where it's going to be. Then we just assigned people to work on specific aspects. You know, like I might write music and then I need or sketch out music and I might give it to someone else so that they can fill it out more or they can mock it up for me. Because a lot of times, in this one in particular, we didn't have that much time. So we need to kind of act quickly. So I need more people to help get the process from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And we're recording live orchestra. So we have the music to write and then we got to get it approved and there's revisions involved with the director. And so there's a lot of work on just the composition side. And then on top of that, then we need to get it ready so that the music in my head can get to the players, like with parts and scores. So we have a couple of people help translate that into, you know, like from computer to paper. Mm-hmm. So there's a few people, there's like a process involved there. I might be writing more music while someone else is prepping all of that. So it's kind of like we're all working on different levels. And so we organize it with, I use Google Docs. I use like a huge Google Doc chart. You know, I have someone who's a coordinator who is keeping everyone on par, like making sure everyone's doing their job. Because I'm busy writing or I'm busy with the director. And then I've got other people doing different lists. So it gets kind of complicated. But the point is, it's all about communication, all about keeping it organized. And making sure it's fun, because why else would you do it?
And that, what he just described, is exactly like our activity in the marching arts, because trying to get your team all on the same page and communicate between them and make sure everybody's like that.
Yeah.
That's a hard job for people. And there's someone in charge of that usually these days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in when you're composing it, Does somebody else take it and orchestrate it? Are you putting notes in your score? Are you writing the score already orchestrated? Like,
oh yeah,
never, I always wonder like how much a composer is doing the actual orchestration.
You know, some composers orchestrate their own music. Some composers are more of like a band thing, so they're just kind of giving you a vibe and maybe a melody line and this and that. So you got a team that helps you, but I mean, in our case, you know, I tend to orchestrate my music to a certain point in my computer. I don't handwrite it. It's all on the computer.
Well, can you describe what that point is?
Yeah. So I'll write my music, and I know what I want in terms of what instrument is going to be the melody or the harmony or rhythm. You know, like all these things that compositional techniques. I kind of have a good understanding of what I want. And so I'll put that down on the computer, and then at that point I'll have an orchestrator put that into a notation program like Sibelius, and then they'll put that for every single instrument. And so they'll know, okay, this phrase, the melody is in the trumpet. Okay, so they're going to put that in the trumpet and then add articulations and things that notation software is good at that mm-hmm. you don't have on the computer. Mm-hmm. When I say computer, I mean DAW. Right, like I use Digital Performer to write my music. That's what I mean by computer.
A DAW is a digital audio workstation.
Yeah.
Oh, so like
thank you. Like Logic.
Digital Performer, Cubase, yeah. All these big.
And I use Digital Performer, yeah. And then, and so that's kind of my process.
So you're sort of notating this is a wind thing, this is a string thing, yes. whatever, and then you yes. let somebody else actually do the, yeah. put it into the parts and orchestrate it.
Exactly.
Okay, which obviously is going to save you a lot of time, because... If you tried to do that as well. So
yeah, the idea like try to write sense. 2 hours of music by yourself from beginning to end in 2 months. Full orchestral music. It's wow. It's a daunting task.
Yeah.
On top of meetings and revisions. So it's basically you're scoring the movie twice.
And you're also acting as – you're also supervising this team. So yeah, you're also spending a lot of time making sure everybody else is on point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, to a degree, to a certain extent, yes. Mm. I have another person helping me with like the nitty gritty details. But yes, it's yeah, exactly what you're saying.
This is cool. One time I heard an interview with Howard Shore, the famous film composer. And I think he was talking about Lord of the Rings, one of the Lord of the Rings movies. And I think it might be just on DVD commentary, but he was like, yeah, it's like a freight train. There's a freight train and it's rolling down the tracks. And what I'm doing is laying down. I'm like a few feet ahead of this rail. I lay down this rail and this rail, and then somebody lays down one tie, and then another team lays down the next tie, and then another team lays down the next tie, and then the train rolls over that track.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that he just has to keep laying that's down funny. Rails until a year later or however long it took to. So yeah. Does that kind of describe that yeah. workflow feeling? Like, what if you have a bad writing day?
Yeah. That doesn't matter. Yeah. You got to keep going. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you schedule fudge time in case you have a bad writing day? I mean, this is kind of a personal question, but it's I have bad writing day. I can't get
anything
done.
Sure. Everyone does. I think, you know, you give yourself enough time so you're not killing yourself in terms of like, you know, you're just not able to produce it. I think there's a balance, but sometimes you just do the work when you can and, you know, you try to really make their deadline because obviously that can't change. Mm-hmm. But other times, you know, when you have a little bit more time, you know, the obviously the point is not to procrastinate and shoot yourself in the foot. You know, you try to hurry up and get some things going and kind of start right away. Mm-hmm. But when I have a bad day, it's I don't let that be a bad day. I let that be a little, you know, a bad little session. So I'll get out of my seat. I'll go do something else, you know, and get my head back in the game.
Mm.
Usually.
That sounds to me a little bit like I've heard this term recently called pattern interrupt, where – I don't know if – I think this applies, but where you catch yourself in a state that's the wrong state. And in order to fix it, yeah, that sounds like you're interrupting.
It's kind of something you have to learn because for me, I have to do it every single day. And you know, there will be times where I'm not creative right now. Like I have nothing in the tank. Or there are days where I'm just like super gung ho and I've got like too many ideas.
Huh.
You know, it's kind of varied, but you learn how to pace yourself. You learn when you are empty, what to do or tricks to like get you back in the game and things like that. But
Wow.
Yeah, I take showers.
Not that I'm like, take showers.
I'm telling you. I have a
block? I used to just take a nap.
Or walk the dog. I walk the
I'm
dog.
I'm so stressed, I'll take a nap.
Yeah, well, that worked. Okay.
Sounds nice right now.
No, I get my best ideas in the shower. So if I'm having a rough time, I'm very
clean. It's me time.
And that sort of resets you? Yeah, it's a me time. Yeah, it's a special. It's a Calgon moment.
That's the only me time I have in the shower.
Is it like a reset, basically? You get out of the shower and you feel like, oh, like a different day almost,
I think, or? It's a matter of turning off your brain. For me, it's like, you know, you get obsessed and you're stuck. And so if I go walk the dog or I get in the shower and I'm thinking about something else, and then suddenly my brain is working in the background and it's like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Let me towel off and go keep working.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take walks. I know it works for me. I take a walk. And what's really funny is that whatever problem I'm trying to solve, excuse me, a musical decision to be made, right? I'm like, God, just take a walk. And I get up, and literally within the first 5 minutes of my walk, the problem is solved.
Right, yeah.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
One other thing, Fred, that, you know, in your film talk, it was really cool. You played a cue, and I think it was from the same animation project that you were just mentioning. And it was like a Tom and Jerry style cue.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what was the name of the show again? That's
Pin Zero.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And
for Disney XD.
It's for Disney XD. Yeah. Awesome. The episode was, you know, an incredible animated, really, really entertaining
so good.
Piece. But it was like an homage to Tom and Jerry. So it was like a neo Tom and Jerry. And you wrote a cue. It's kind of a leading question, but you wrote a cue that was so dynamic and – it sounded like a Warner Brothers cue. Absolutely. I mean, you got like the anvil on the head and just the boom, the xylophone and everything. Beep, 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 beep when they blink their eyes.
That's called Mickey Mousing.
Mickey Mousing?
Yeah.
That's like when you do every little tiny thing along the way.
Yeah, it's just like the old Mickey Mouse cartoons. Every gesture, every movement was captured musically.
And it sounded like right out of that era. And I wanted to just ask you, I think everyone was really impressed at the symposium because we heard cues like that from you. And then we heard today some cues for Need for Speed, for instance, of one of the Need for Speed games from a few years back that were absolutely loop-based, electronic, four-on-the-floor type cues, radically different style of music.
Right.
How'd you get so good at being able to handle, you know, different genres?
How did I get so good?
Well, but, you know, being versatile in a lot of styles is tough for people. So if you can do that, I am impressed. I mean, really.
Being versatile is something that is kind of needed in film because you just don't know. I mean, film is all over the road. It might be, you know, you might need to have it might take place in India, but in the 1700s, you know, and then flash forward, there's a time traveling and you're now in future India. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you have to be at least understanding of like all sorts of music. You might not be a professional at all of those, but at least you can learn a lot of it and then get yourself around or at least do research on
certain
things.
I was about to ask you, do you do a lot of research to try to make it authentic and get it right?
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of like the Tom and Jerry, like Carl Stalling, music, you know, I just listened to his stuff on repeat and then I would analyze like how to do it, tempo changes, pacing, you know, instrumentation, sound effects from the orchestra, what like the trombone slide and like all these different things that are characteristic of that style. It's like I made a list, you know, I wrote it down and I've tried to figure out. So I did a lot of research on that end, watched a bunch of old shows and like, how did they Mickey Mouse it? And what was their, you know, like, you know, with the eyelids, you know, you move your eyebrow and it's like a little piano twinkle or like a xylophone, little click, click, you know, type of thing. You know, you kind of look at it in those ways or, you know, when someone gets bonked on the head and they have like these Tweety Birds all over, it's like,
what is that?
You know, like a celeste or like flute trill or something, you know, and
maybe like when you watch,
it's like you learn the tricks of the trade in those ways. And so that's how I did my research. And then on other films, you know, with, I did, a movie from Vietnam and that was very, you know, he wanted very eclectic amount of instruments. And a lot of them I didn't know about. I didn't really know how to write for it. You know, I didn't know those instruments. So I had to really research what instruments they were, how they sounded, how could you play them, and this, you know, all that stuff. is there anyone in town that plays those I can reach out to, you know? Mm. Sometimes like, I couldn't find it, or or I have a friend who's like, yeah, I kind of know. It's this, la, 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 you know, whatever. So there's a lot of research involved in that. But it's you do your research in music no matter what you do. It's just different kinds. But I think that's important too.
And you'd probably – would you do some actual transcriptions too? Like if you want to know what the chord changes are, you would actually maybe do a old school transcription of
sure.
of it.
Sure. Yeah, I'll always do that, yeah. Mm. Well, sometimes I'll do it on the piano or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
One other thing just that I thought about as he was talking, it was pretty cool. One of the things about Los Angeles, people ask a lot, you know, do I have to be in Los Angeles to do films? No, but this situation, when you need a particular instrument or a particular instrumentation, or you need to record that person tomorrow, a lot of times you can find that person here. That person who plays something really weird or has an exact a particular type of voice, you know, that person lives in Los Angeles. Mm. So well, although it's remote recording, I guess, but
– well, that's big. You know, I wouldn't say you have to live in L.A. No, I wouldn't say that. That's I know plenty of people who don't live in L.A. that do film composing.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what you're talking about, like, hey, I gotta find a player tonight. You know, I mean, that's what's great about social media and web, you know, personal websites and finding people, because musicians, they're so wanting to work. You know, you can reach out to anybody. Hey, I've got this short film, and I really want a solo violin. And you reach out, and you find a solo violinist on Facebook or whatever, and boom, you made a connection.
Mm.
You know,
wow. And remote recording,
and nowadays because of, you know, Logic and just the accessibility of mobile recording. I mean, almost everyone does that. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's super available.
I guess I have a question that probably some people are actually thinking. If you're a young composer, how do you – if you had to just give them one piece of advice for how to – maybe they're into pageantry right now. They love doing drumline. That was the case for me when I was younger. What's the best first step they can take to move to expand beyond the marching arts and move into something – into film scoring, for instance?
Well, I'm not sure – if it would be the first thing, but I think probably the first thing is to, you know, start watching film a little bit more with an analytical ear, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to more scores with a more analytical ear.
Mm-hmm.
Attending concerts. Oh my gosh, orchestras nowadays, all they do is play film music.
Mm-hmm.
There's
to survive, basically.
Well. But they have a lot of resources online. One is the Society of Composers and Lyricists, the SCL. That's a huge, huge resource for people. There's so much resource.
And SCL,
so many resources online.
When I hear of SCL, I always think about these meetings that happen, at least in Los Angeles, where you can go and you can network with other composers and stuff.
Yeah, they'll have events too. They have it in – they don't just have it in L.A. I think they have it in New York.
Okay.
And
online.
Maybe they have it in other places.
They have some kind of a network online as well that's got some activity if you don't live in New York or one of those cities.
Maybe.
I'm not sure.
I find out online, I guess. I don't know.
I went to those a lot when I was younger. And
film festivals, those are everywhere.
Mm.
You know, go to those, network with people. Those are a lot of fun.
Mm.
Those can be a lot of fun.
You mentioned yesterday, too, about – this is along the same lines – about when you were in school and even maybe just after school trying to network with the local kids in the film program.
Totally. Right? Yeah, like college film school. It's great. Yeah, totally.
Do you still work with anybody that you met that way, or did anything blossom into some bigger jobs later?
Yeah, I think I'll work with a few people now. Yeah.
That's cool.
For sure. We did I'm trying to think. We did a short film for like a nonprofit organization. What is it called? International Justice Mission. They do they kind of help with like sex trafficking, and they help make laws like to bring those criminals to justice and as they should. But we did like a really awesome emotional story on someone who was saved from that human sex trafficking. And it was super powerful.
Mm.
Super powerful.
And that's a project you wouldn't have done had you not gone into the film school and met the
yeah. And it's one of those projects where not only is it creatively rewarding, but it's like life rewarding, where you're helping spread awareness for people to, you know, for something that's that horrific, in my opinion.
Mm. And the composer's job in something like that is to create to capture the emotion. So closely tied to that, right?
Yeah.
Anyway. I guess one of the really cool kind of takeaways that we had with Fred, because it's really hard to bring in people who we all have background in marching arts, and so does Fred, by the way. Still teaches and writes for drum corps.
Cool.
And still loves drum corps, but we're trying to connect dots and just also make sure that everybody knows, as much as you love the marching arts, that a lot of us have found ways to branch out. And the Arcadia Symposium is really all about that, like making your understanding and your expertise in marching arts to grow that, but to also see what else is out there. Yeah. And that's one of the great things that having Fred did for us this year.
And I love that you're doing this really successful, you know, film and game scoring, and you're also still part of the pageantry world. Like, I think that's awesome that you can do, you know, you can do all of it.
Yeah.
I have one question for you about the work you do, and I hope this doesn't take us too far on a tangent, but I'm interested in how much freedom you're given on projects to just do your thing, and how much they're micromanaging, or I want it to sound like this. I mean, I'm sure it depends on the project.
Definitely.
But in general, like, is there any general rules there? How much?
Well, the general rule is you're serving the director's vision of the film.
Ah.
That's they are the creative, like, commander in chief. And so our job isn't to take whatever we want to do and then, you know, and say what we want to say. It's we have to kind of funnel everything we do through what the director wants to say. And then that will go into different personalities of different directors you work with. Like, maybe that director is very trusting of your instincts, so they allow you to do what you want to do. Other times they have a very specific way they want things done. So you know, there's a lot of learning, you know, those types of dynamics.
Sure.
So I would say it really depends.
Yeah.
I've had people literally breathe down my neck as I write. I've had a director who's like, I literally don't care what you write. Just, you know, whatever you want to do. So it's like I've had everything in between.
Right.
So
interesting.
They're like, I'm too busy to even like listen to what you're going to write. I you do what you want to do, or, you know, whatever. It's so funny. Wow. But by and large, we discuss kind of the overall musical approach, and then I go, and then we kind of have a conversation. And
you have to play them like ideas of what you're thinking about
sometimes. Yeah. And I actually try and have a totally finished product, like a mocked up sample of what I'm gonna do for them, so that's we leave like the guessing game out of the mix.
Right.
Like back in the day, they didn't have all that technology. You know, they had to play from the piano. Like, this is what I'm kind of thinking, and then you get to the recording session with the orchestra, and then it could go south,
or it'd be like, imagine this with flutes really high.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a guessing game, you know. So there's a lot more chance involved now. I can make it sound like a real orchestra, and they would know exactly what they were going to get.
That sounds really, really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like pre-rendering and the 3D environment, the 3D animation, like you pre-render this really blocky, bad.
Yeah.
You know,
at the same time, it's still not the same thing as like a real living, breathing orchestra playing.
Well, but you know, we
at
have
the
that
top
problem.
Level.
We have that problem in the marching arts where, you know, colored people especially are always complaining that they can't hear the music on the computer MIDI.
You know, it's funny because I know exactly what you're talking about. And so I do this for Vanguard, Acor, right? I do all their mock-ups at a pro level.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool,
so
cool.
So what we – well, how we, pro level, quote unquote.
It's going to sound like really great.
Yeah so the ones – the step that I do is, you know how most people use Sibelius – and Sibelius sounds, or Finale sounds, and that's it. Well, that's a very, very, very poor representation of what it would sound like. So I do all that with my samples, with my DAW, my digital performer, and I'll really craft it so it has a much higher quality so that they can really tell what it's going to sound like. And that's really good for the visual guys, color guard, you know, so they're not waiting until the core has already played through it at a high level.
To know what it really sounds like.
Yeah.
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 Oh, that's really smart.
I just had a random creative thought. Somebody out there needs to poach this. But obviously all the horn lines have switched from, what was it? I'm not a horn player, but it was G horns.
Yeah, from G to B-flat bugles, yeah.
And everyone's on B-flat pretty much. So, and I miss those G horns because to me, the drum corps sounded cool, partly because it was so weird. It's a weird, a really interesting sound. A bugle, the G bugle and that G tuning does not sound like wind ensemble. But everybody switched, they got better control, blah, 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 be better in tune. But I missed those and I just realized, oh, I bet you, as far as I know, there is no, I can't think of a sample library of the old G horns. And nobody uses the old G horns in real life anymore anyway, but I just wish that somebody made a library out of it because it's
if somebody's out there, let us know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, of course, how we've gotten into amplification because we're all trying to, not to open a can of worms at the end of our conversation, but they're trying to get back to that sound and power that the G's had.
Oh, really?
That's one of the theories of why we're now miking horn lines because they're trying to catch back up to, because I got to tell you, G bugles were louder and had a different, more open sound. So you're right. We got a better quality of sound perhaps and, control of the instruments and those kind of things. We gave something up too.
There was a raw.
I'm sick of B flat.
Yeah. I don't have a dog in this hunt. I'm a percussionist.
Yeah, let's not go down the road.
But I play the marimba. But I will say I missed the. There was a raw energy coming off the. There still is. Don't get me wrong. When you stand in front of a horn line, but I do miss that weird. Almost maybe because it's slightly out of tune. Almost like a bad celeste or like a bad piano.
Yeah,
that's like
was, the instruments wonky. Were. Yeah, but there was a charm to that for
yeah,
sure.
Charm.
A
that's
power.
The word. That's the word. Charm.
So, like, I think everybody that's listening is, like, super jealous of you, Fred, that you have this. Well, you're doing the same kind of thing. You guys are both doing this amazing work with this. Like, is your life as great as we think it is? Like, it was like, we're all like, man, I wish I could do that. I want to write music for animated,
I
want to
laugh.
Whatever.
I want to laugh at that.
Fred talked a lot about this.
Yeah. It's, what did I say? I said, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. You know, like, what you don't know. You know, like, sure, it sounds really cool, but I work 16-hour days, you know, for months at a time. And, you know, it's exhausting. It's exhausting work. And, you know.
So there's trade-offs, of course.
Yeah.
And the demands the demands are high in your field.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's
exciting.
You know.
Well, I think it's, like, super cool that we have real film and video game composers at the Arcadia Symposium that we can talk to and learn from and compare notes. And yeah, I do that too when I write. Like it's amazing that you guys are here. And thank you for taking time, Fred, to like have this conversation and share. So each of you, final thoughts, Stephen, anything you want to say in closing about all of this we just discussed?
Yeah, I just, I said in our other talk too, but it's been hard as I've gotten older. I've learned that I have to be active in different industries. Like to try to make a living. And we did talk about this yesterday too, but it's been frustrating because they felt like diverse, weird, unrelated things. And at the symposium, Tony Nunez, one of his stated goals in the first year, 2 years ago, our first year we did this, was to connect the dots. I think that's the exact, you know, quote, connect the dots. And it's happening. I feel like it started happening right away in the first year, but this year I feel a real synergy and there's a cross-pollinization.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely
happening. And if you have time to come out, and we do a Spark events in different cities as well, just please come and we'd like to connect with you and try to get that synergy going with you as well.
And are you feeling better about all of your weird little pots that you actually see go together? Of
the
your
what?
Work? Of your
oh.
pots of your work?
Yeah.
You said you had all these different pieces and you thought they didn't really fit, but now you're seeing that they fit.
Well, yeah, because they feed each other, they cross-pollinate, and they help to make the other better. And I also realized it's okay to spend some time on this particular network because some of the people actually crossed over to this other network.
Right. It
that's
all
what
connects. Yeah, mm-hmm. Cool. Fred, final thoughts from you, man.
This symposium's been awesome. This guy, Steve. Did you call Steve or Steven? What do you
Everybody calls me Steve. It's like,
Steve?
It depends. If you met me at UCLA, I'm Steven.
Okay.
But if you met me at any other
time,
I'm Steve.
I'm going to call you Steve.
That's fine.
All right.
Glad we got that clear.
It's been great. He's done such a great job. I mean, making things on time. I mean, just all the various talks. I mean, gosh, we've covered everything.
Yeah, man.
Like literally you should be able to come away with so much from this this week or weekend.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm just blown away at the at what these guys have given and offered to students and educators. I mean, literally next year it should just double in size because
why we're doing these conversations. We want people to know, but I think it's awesome that you guys are here. So thank you for being here. Thanks for taking your time, Fred. If you're doing all these 16-hour days and you like you stopped to come help. Like, so I mean, yeah, it's a sacrifice. So but thank you for being here.
Now it's World Cup.
Then, now
don't tell me scores.
That's right. He wants to watch the World Cup. So you go watch some soccer. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having
me. Yeah, thank you. Cool.
Watch for other podcasts from the Arcadia Music and Arts Symposium, including conversations with some of the biggest names in the marching arts. Find out more about the Arcadia Symposium at arcadiasymposium.com. And keep up with the podcasts that are being recorded and when they'll be released by following us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And get our biweekly newsletter by signing up for a free VIP membership at marchingroundtable.com. Imagine having your best season ever. The first 20 students to sign up for the new online course, Scott Chandler, Design Advice from Forward March, can get 20% off using coupon code SCOTTCHANDLER at marchingartseducation.com. Give your students the advantage of great new ideas and a more educated and productive staff. marchingartseducation.com. Thanks again to the sponsor of this podcast, Digital Performance Gear, found at digitalperformancegear.com. When you contact the good folks at Digital Performance Gear, tell them you heard about them on the Marching Roundtable podcast. Thanks again to Tony Nunez and everyone at the Arcadia Symposium for having the Marching Roundtable there to do these interviews. Watch for more podcasts from the event. And thanks so much for listening. If you're a business that works with band directors, marching bands, color guards, or drum lines, you should consider sponsoring an episode of the Marching Roundtable. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach, and with thousands of podcast downloads each month, it's a great way to directly reach your target audience. For more information, click on the Sponsorship Opportunities link at marchingroundtable.com or email Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. You can grow your business and help support what we're doing here on the podcast. Thanks.